Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The best old-time radio from people you trust. The Radio Nostalgia Network, where the oldies are still young.
It's Friday on Radio Memories, and that's when we enter an alternate dimension. Science Fiction Friday.
Weed Island, day 10. The sun was a little brighter. I got busy cutting away vegetation from a dinghy with the idea of making for the Isle of Wight. Yes, an insane plan, but right then anything was better than staying there playing at Robinson Crusoe in a flying suit.
It's no good, my green friend. Your venom won't touch me with the visor down.
However, best laid plans, mice and men and all that. I looked up and was amazed to see a steamship passing my floating island. It took just a moment for me to fire a distress flare. And once again, events were poised to take an unexpected turn.
Over here!
Welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you. Oh, you don't know how grateful
I... Some of these folk here on deck took you to be a spaceman. Most here was minded to put a rifle bullet in your belly. For safety's sake, you understand?
I'm glad you persuaded him to hold his fire.
I did not, sir. Our favored placing a bullet in your leg. My passengers here steered me on a different course.
The deck was crowded with people who stared at the new arrival from Weed Island. They remained oddly silent. Not so the formidable captain of the ship.
Thy name is Sharpstone, master of the steamship Beagle Miner. I think you went on that scrap of flotsam through choice.
No, I made a forced landing several days ago.
Forced landing? Your pilot, then? Any passengers?
I explained how I came to be stranded on the floating island. That and the death of Seymour Hinckman.
That's infernal bad luck, sir. I figure you could use a hot shower and a square meal.
Thank you. That would be very welcome.
Yeah, well, first, for the log, a formality. Your name and where you hail from?
David Mason, from the Isle of Wight.
Now, please excuse me. I have my duties. My passengers will attend to your needs. I dare say they'll have questions of their own.
Wait, we can't go yet.
Oh, indeed, Mr. Mason. I believe I am still captain of this ship, not you.
It's just that there might be someone else on the island.
You told me that your passenger was dead.
That's right, but there was this girl. I thought she'd been killed by the Triffids. I can't be certain, though. We must make a search.
A girl? What kind of girl?
I found a girl living on that island. Mass of floating debris, call it what you will, age about 16 or so.
And a mermaid?
I'm not insane, Captain. When I fired at a Triffid, the sound of my pistol terrified her. She ran away. She...
Bosun set a course south.
She could still be alive, hiding, so...
10 nuts, Mr. Shea.
Captain, she might be out there, stranded, with nothing but filthy rats to eat and blasted Triffids for company. If we don't find her, she will die.
Mind your tongue, sir.
Captain, take a look at the island. There's something or someone you ought to see.
Both the captain and I looked up to see a young woman with a pair of binoculars held to her eyes. We peered towards my island through the half-light, and my heart leapt as I saw the distinctive figure of my fellow castaway at the water's edge. Is the girl all right?
She's fine. Kimso's finding her some clothes to replace those rags.
She wasn't stung by a Triffid.
No, there's not a scratch on her. Do sit down. This is the passenger saloon. We can relax here. Our illicit domain.
Pardon?
The crew aren't allowed into any cabin where there's alcohol. Speaking of which, I imagine you could use a stiff drink. Scotch?
Thank you. You're American.
You Brits are one heck of a perceptive race. And look at that rubber suit you're wearing. Is that what all fashionable young men sport on your side of the Atlantic? Here, chin chin.
Sorry.
Oh,
Sorry for stating the obvious, that you're American. The past few days have been, well, unusual. Day as black as night, crashing my plane, a feral girl. Oh, good grief. Whiskey's strong.
Sounds like you need another one of those and a good night's sleep. Oh, by the by, my name is Karis Bydecker. New York City, born and bred.
That's when I seem to see Karis Bydecker for the first time. A beautiful woman. Age 25 or so. Delicious wash of soft hair somewhere between red and blonde. Her eyes were clear, intelligent, with dancing shades of green that were absolutely, quintessentially amazing. She took my breath away.
David, let's get you out of that flying suit.
Okay.
Goodness, not here. There's a cabin across the way. Use that.
All right, thanks.
And I hereby register my admiration. It's not every day that someone stands up to the fearsome Captain Sharpstone. Congratulations.
But I couldn't just leave without checking if the girl was alive or dead.
You saved her life, David. Now, go shower, grab some shut-eye, then I'll introduce you to the rest of the science team. Sweet dreams.
Later, I found myself in the passenger saloon with Karis Bydecker, she of the amazing green eyes. With her was a man in a white lab coat, while towering above him was a veritable titan with skin as black as coal.
David, these two gentlemen are my colleagues in adventure. That's Rory Masterfield, geologist. He plays the meanest dueling banjo ever. My specialty is zoology. And this giant is Gabriel Deeds, our botanist.
Pleased to meet you, David. Say, do you play table tennis?
When the weather's too bad to fly. Rory Masterfield smiled readily enough, yet he seemed suspicious of me.
That was some suit you were wearing. What kind of machine did you have?
A jet fighter.
Hey, chow's up. Grab a seat at the table, David.
Dive in and help yourself.
That smells good. My God, there are actual whole beefsteaks in this stew.
After doing the Robinson Crusoe thing, you must be hungry.
I'll say. And blow me down if I never taste Triffid again.
Triffid?
You actually eat those things?
Man, I'd rather starve.
Thick cuts of beef, rich gravy, hunks of fresh bread. Heaven, sheer heaven. As I wolfed down the food, I noticed that my hosts stared at me, like eager children waiting for a conjurer to pull the first rabbit from out of a hat.
Coffee?
Thanks.
Do your people know what's causing this lack of daylight?
Between mouthfuls, I told them what I knew, that this plague of darkness had come without warning, and that I'd been sent on a decidedly ill-fated mission to solve the mystery.
The darkness hit us off the Norwegian coast.
Therefore, we believe this lack of daylight is global.
Well, my passenger, a meteorologist, speculated that there's a cloud of dust in the upper atmosphere.
A dust cloud might well block sunlight from reaching the Earth. More coffee?
Cheers. What brings you here? I mean, it's the first time I've heard of Americans crossing the Atlantic since the Great Blinding.
The Great Blinding? We call it the beginning.
And I call that enforced optimism.
Then again, David, no Europeans have made the trip west in many a long year.
Having to fight for survival puts international travel firmly in second place.
Hey, man, I couldn't agree more. But we're putting that to rights now. This tub is trucking south from the Arctic Circle all along the European coast. We're taking specimens, animal, vegetable, mineral.
Don't worry, David. We're calling at the Isle of Wight to take you home.
We'll say hello to your people, too. We're getting to know all the communities of the survivors out there.
Communities like yours, David. We want to know how you've managed to stay alive.
Yeah, after all, where does your aviation fuel come from?
Well, from Triffids.
Triffids? How on earth do you produce aviation fuel from Triffids?
My father and a man called Coker invented a process that distills natural Triffid oil into a combustible liquid that's similar to petroleum.
Just listen to that. Not only do these guys eat those damn plants, they're squeezing gasoline out of them as well.
Allowing you to maintain a fleet of military aircraft?
Purely defensive.
But just as quickly offensive. What's to stop your people bombing the hell out of New York?
After dinner, Karis and I took a stroll. We had the deck to ourselves.
He's right.
Rory, He struck me as being downright aggressive.
We don't have military jets. How could we stop you bombing our city?
We wouldn't do that.
Oh? We've suffered pirate raids. People died, including Rora's brother.
I'm sorry. Dash it all, Kerris. The Isle of Wight isn't hell-bent on world domination.
Dark, isn't it? I can't even see the ocean. So cold for May. Look at my arm. Goosebumps.
The sun must have only just set. But there's not a scrap of dusk, is there?
Does it frighten you?
I'd be a fool to say that it doesn't.
Without daylight, there'll be no photosynthesis. Plants will die. Without plants, herbivores will become extinct. Soon the food chain will be shattered, link by link. The end of life on Earth.
The captain told me that I'd be home within 10 hours. I sat in the saloon talking to Gabriel and Rory. That's when Kerris ushered in a surprise visitor. It was the girl from the island. I hardly recognized her.
Kim So's worked a miracle. Hair, clothes, shoes. Though she still used blankets to make a kind of nest in the corner of her cabin.
Whoa, what a transformation. It's a pleasure to meet you, miss.
Ma?
Is she mute?
When it comes to speaking, she's just out of practice.
I imagine that she's been living alone for years. How she managed
The will to survive is a powerful one, David.
She's one heck of a tough kid.
Hello. You remember me? We were both on the island.
Hello.
Hey, wait. Please, come back.
This is all new to her. She's probably a bit overwhelmed.
However, she returned a moment later, carrying one of those little tin cylinders that used to contain cigars back in the old world.
Oh, that was in a satchel that she brought on board with her. It was full of string, pencils, matchboxes, all kind of bits and pieces.
David, she wants you to have the cigar, too.
Just don't smoke the thing in here. It'll play havoc with my sinuses.
Stopper's tight. That's it. Empty. No cigar.
You...
Sorry. I don't understand.
David... It... Read it.
The sheet of paper had been rolled in such a way that I hadn't noticed it at first. I teased it from the tube. This was a letter, and it had been written in a hurry. The girl's eyes fixed on me.
Read.
To whom it may concern. The girl who handed you this letter is my daughter, Christina Schofield. She is 5 years old. For me, time is short. Safe to say, for 20 years, our community, a mix of sighted and unsighted, lived in a stockade on the Cornish coast. Last year, we were attacked by bandits. Women and young children were carried off by the raiders. The remainder were butchered. I managed to escape with Christina. We wandered for months in that Triffid haunted wasteland that is now Britain, sleeping in ruins, nothing to eat but rats, never seeing another human being. I am an old man. My health is failing. Walking is an ordeal. I am so weak I can barely hold this pen. And now the Triffids are closing in. I understand that my time here on Earth is drawing to a close. My only concern is for my little daughter. The thought of leaving her alone, unprotected, undefended against those vile plants breaks my heart. However, I found a boat on the riverbank. I'm giving Christina the last of the food, and I will put her in the boat and send her on alone. I might be condemning her to death, but is there another way? Is there?
Christina, it's all right. We're going to look after you.
The letter was signed Benjamin Schofield. According to its date, he'd written those heartfelt words a decade ago. Picturing a young child surviving alone in the wilderness was hard to bear. I left the saloon, needing to be alone with my thoughts for a while. The sun was there, just a dull red smudge in the sky. I stood on deck with Kerris. The ship's wake painted a gleaming white line on the ocean. It took a while, but at last I saw that there was something wrong with the sun. Something very wrong indeed.
Kerris, look at the sun.
What about it? I don't
It's before midday. The sun's still rising, but it's rising over the stern, behind the ship. It should be rising in front of it. That means we're heading west, not east.
That's strange. We're supposed to be
taking me home. I'm going to talk to Captain Ruddy Bly, or whatever his name is.
Mr. Mason, slept well, I trust. Take up to 18 knots, Mr. Bryce.
Captain, we're heading in the wrong direction.
There's nothing wrong with our course.
You promised to take me to the Isle of Wight. That's east, not west.
I have had orders from the highest authority to turn this ship around and make all speed for my home port in New York City.
What do you do in such a situation? Stage a one-man mutiny? Hardly. Instead, I rejoin Kerris, where I'm sorry to say she heard my opinions of the captain's orders, all of them peppered with some very colourful English slang. The Atlantic crossing would take 5 days, ample time to cool my temper. I wanted to send a message home, but the captain had been ordered to maintain radio silence. So I made the best of things, and found myself becoming friends with Kerris and Gabriel. Rory Masterfield tended to keep himself to himself. Gabriel Deeds repeatedly thrashed me at table tennis, but I wreaked my revenge when I introduced him to cricket. Glorious cricket.
Cricket? That's just a squeaky bug.
You've never heard of the game cricket? Bat, ball, stumps?
Never.
I'll teach you. We can use that open bit of the saloon. Making a ball from rolled-up socks and using a cardboard tube as a bat, I showed that ebony giant the rudiments of cricket. I got on famously with Gabriel. His warmth did much for my spirits. Time passed. We played cricket in the saloon and drank coffee. Real coffee, not the acorn stuff I'd been raised on. How my father would have loved a cup of that rich, aromatic brew.
There. Through the mist. Do you see it?
That's New York.
Home, sweet home.
Dawn hadn't so much broken as oozed from the horizon. A stain, the color of blood. Yet I could still make out that great metropolis. H.G. Wells said that New York was such a funny-looking place. Lots of buildings sticking up or full of windows. The great man didn't do this enchanting scene justice. I saw towering skyscrapers. The Empire State and the Chrysler Building. This could have been a city from a marvelous dream.
You'll stay at Golding's Hotel on Broadway. Gabriel will meet you later and take you to a clothes store where... David, what's wrong? Why are you holding on to that wall?
Great Scott. You can feel it.
Are you okay?
The traffic, all this sound, it's making the actual building vibrate. Feel the stone, Kerris. It's like a heartbeat. Manhattan's a living creature.
Yes.
It's fantastic. I've never experienced anything like it. All these people, cars, buses. No one ever seems to rush on the Isle of Wight. Here, everyone's in a hurry. Look at all those yellow taxis.
This big city bustle can be overwhelming if you're not used to it.
I want to just stand here, drink it all in.
In all our travels, we've never found a city like this. One full of people, that is.
This is a miracle. A living, breathing miracle.
You'll soon get used to all the noise.
And you say New York is an island fortress. There aren't any more communities of survivors on the American mainland.
There are a few people out there, scratching up enough food to keep alive. They're constantly hassled by Triffids, of course.
But there are no cities like this.
No. This is unique.
Unique. Indeed so. When our ship approached, I'd seen tugs, fishing vessels, steamers. There, the Statue of Liberty. The famous Bronze Lady had, alas, suffered mutilation. Her eyes had been dynamited from her face, leaving her somehow monstrous looking. Perhaps the statue had been symbolically blinded to mark the beginning of a sightless world. Then once I was ashore, the city itself. Car headlamps by the thousand made rivers of light. Tribeca, Chinatown, Little Italy, fabled Broadway. I tell you, I wasn't thinking about home. I only had eyes for this powerhouse of a city. Not for the first time, New York had turned a young man's head.
Pops, pop, pop, popcorn.
Cooked fresh on the stove.
Delicious.
With movies.
With friends.
We all love pop, pop, popcorn.
Always cover pan while cooking. Discard on popcorn.
New York, home to the brightest minds, the finest people.
Case in point, a wonderful device in the hotel bar captured my attention and wouldn't let go.
Can I get you one of your cigars?
Sir?
Mm-hmm.
Sir, there's a gentleman waiting for you in the lobby.
Incredible. You know, this is the first time I've seen a working television.
You people in England don't have TV?
Not since the blinding. Oh. Oh, those colors. Amazing. I've never seen films like this before.
Films? Sir, those are just TV commercials. You won't forget the gentleman by the name of Deeds?
Gabriel. The big man stood on the other side of the lobby door. I beckoned him. Gabriel shook his head. I tried again, and despite my expressive come-on-in gestures, he resolutely shook his head.
Hey, Gabe, why didn't you come into the hotel bar?
I couldn't. Here, this envelope's for you.
Banknotes? I can't take your money.
Mr. Mason, it's government money to cover incidentals while you're our guest. There's a subway pass, too, for the trains. Now, if you'll come this way, sir, we'll go shopping, get you fitted out with clothes, shoes...
Gabe, why are you calling me Mr. Mason and sir?
Wait! Don't run off!
I'll show you how to use the subway trains. Please hurry, sir. I have a meeting at 2.
Still wondering why Gabriel had started calling me Mr. Mason, I followed that giant of a man from the hotel and into the street, where we descended a flight of steps into the station. So, this is the famous New York subway. Wow. Do we board this one?
Yes, Mr. Mason. The one at the back is my carriage.
You have your own carriage?
Well, that's the one I'll be riding. You can too if you wish, Mr. Mason.
Gabe, why are you calling me Mr. Mason?
Those are the rules, sir. While we're in public, you are always Mr. Mason.
Then I understood. A sign on the carriage stated colored and unsighted. In that particular carriage were 3 black women and 2 blind men who were white. In the next carriage, white and sighted New Yorkers sat on comfortable seats. This discrimination needled me. And I realized that there was trouble in paradise. Gabriel did indeed show me how to use the subway. I bought new clothes and, yes, I still had something on my mind that worried me. Later, I met up with Keris.
Driver, Central Park, please.
Okay, Keris, where now?
Sightseeing. I explained earlier.
Right.
David, I'm proud of my hometown. I want to show you around. Are you feeling okay?
I'm fine.
I'll give you the grand tour. In that direction, the Empire State Building. My father's office is there. Okay. Manhattan Island is 22 square mile slab of rock. It was once a district of New York City. Electricity is produced by coal-fired generators. Ah, Central Park, where we grow crops, potatoes, corn, and so on. Fresh drinking water arrives through a...
The corn in Central Park wilted miserably under dull red skies. Without normal sunlight, plants were dying. Meanwhile, I got angrier and angrier.
City population stands at 300,000. We have radio, TV, theater...
Why do you discriminate?
Pardon?
Gabriel Deeds couldn't join me in the hotel bar yesterday. I only noticed the sign this morning. Whites and sighted only. See that restaurant? No coloreds, no unsighted. You discriminate against fellow human beings. That's disgusting.
We do things differently than your people.
Differently? Gabriel would break the law if he calls me David in public. That's utterly wrong, Kerris.
So you, an outsider, are going to tell us how to live our lives? Geez, that's so arrogant. I'm sorry, David. Gabriel's your friend. You hate to see him humiliated, but that's the way it is here. Laws exclude the blind and the colored from certain public areas. I can't change the rules, even if I want more than anything else to do so.
It's just... Good grief, it makes my blood boil. It's so bloody unfair. Kerris didn't say anything more. As we sat in the back of the cab, she looked at me with those beautiful green eyes. Then she reached out and took my hand. I couldn't hold Kerris responsible for New York's segregation laws. And when she'd taken my hand in hers, well, the feeling that engulfed me. No, David, don't you dare fall in love. Taxi's motor had failed so catastrophically that the vehicle came to a dead stop.
Come on. It's not far. We'll walk the rest of the way.
And so, we walked.
I feel sorry for our driver. He'll need to replace the entire engine, I shouldn't wonder.
Happens a lot. All our vehicles run on wood alcohol. It's so rough, it chews the pistons to hell after 2,000 miles.
Our engines still run pretty much okay after 100,000 miles.
That's why we desperately need to learn from you and your people how to process Triffid sap into fuel. New York needs to be friends with the Isle of Wight, David. It's a matter of survival.
I agree. Kerris, wait. I shouldn't have got angry with you back there. You know, the segregation notices. Sorry.
Apology warmly accepted. Believe me, I hate discrimination as much as you do. But I ask you not to mention those feelings tonight when you meet my father.
I thought it was the welcome party. I didn't know your father would be there.
Of course. He'll be there to welcome you, David. He's the boss. The leader. He runs New York City.
Really? I didn't...
Now keep walking. Keep smiling.
Are those television cameras on the bridge?
Yes, and they're here for you. You're the first person to cross the Atlantic from Europe in decades. You're famous.